Blog Talk Radio.
From Dog Works Training Centers, professional canine training centers in Denver, Colorado, and Anchorage, Alaska, this is Dog Works Radio, committed to families and their dogs to build lifelong and fulfilling relationships. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Dog Works Radio is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Now, here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to the Cyb Vibe today on Dog Works Radio. And our co-host is on the line, Dorothy Wills Raftery, calling in. Dorothy, how's it going?
Hi, Robert. It's going well here. How about you?
Fine, thanks. I hope by our November show we have your own intro. How about that?
You know, that would be great.
So what's going on over that way?
Oh, just right now getting prepared. Next month is National Epilepsy Awareness Month, so I'm trying to get a lot of different things together to promote canine epilepsy awareness. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit about that at the end of today's show and definitely more in depth next month. How are you doing? You must be in the middle of training up there with Team Ineke.
We are. We got our first little taste of snow yesterday, about an inch and a half up here in Willow. So we're looking forward to breaking out the sleds pretty soon and hitting the trails.
Oh, that sounds great. That sounds great. I think my guys down here would like a little bit of that snow.
There you go.
Well, first I want to say I'm pretty excited. This is our third episode of the Cyb Vibe. You know, it's a lot of fun. I'm definitely excited about the show. And I'd just like to take a minute to welcome our listeners and to, you know, to our show today and give a shout out to my followers and fans of the Five Cybs over on Blogger, Facebook, and Twitter. I hope everyone out there is having a great day. I love that folks ask about our Huskies, and a lot of them know them by name and keep up what's happening here. And Robert, I know you must feel the same about folks following you over at Dog Works Radio and Team Ineke. It's always great hearing from them, isn't it?
It is. And you know, Dorothy, before we get started, I got to mention something to you. Our last show on the Cyb Vibe with Tales of the Tundra, I believe it was,
yes,
is the highest downloaded show so far for Dog Works Radio. 46,000 downloads for you. So that's pretty good.
Oh, that's excellent. I feel like we should have a clapping track right now.
There you go.
Oh, that's great to hear. I think the folks that we talk to and just really spreading the word about the breed and educating about the breed of Siberian Huskies and really help them promote those rescues out there are so important. So it's really great to hear people tuning in and downloading, and a big thank you to all of them for doing that. Today, I'm really excited to introduce our guest. It's Martin Benson, whose best friend growing up was a Siberian Husky. He is a professional photographer, writer, and film director from New York City. He's an honors graduate, actually, of New York University's Tisch School of the Arts Film and Television program. And he first became interested in filmmaking at the age of 9, ever since he's been living the dream and bringing stories to life in film and in the movies. He runs his own company, MJB Home Entertainment, and he's currently busy working on his second film that is slated for the big screen and is a very special movie indeed. It's called Dakota, dedicated to my best friend. And what makes this movie so special is that one of the main co-stars of the movie is a Siberian Husky named Dakota. The synopsis of the movie is, after causing a tragic accident, Kurt Lawson's life free falls into despair and guilt, and he believes that nothing can turn it around until he finds Dakota, a Siberian Husky who is much more than just any ordinary dog. Now, listeners can catch a sneak peek of the movie as well as catch up on cast and crew by visiting the movie's website at www.dakotathemovie.com. And keep an eye out on this week for my blog. I'm going to have an article, an in-depth article on Martin, the movie, and also a permalink to today's show, and that would be over at fivesibes.blogspot.com. I'm not sure exactly which day, but just keep an eye on the blog, and we'll have that to you guys for this week. And Martin, welcome to the Cyb Vibe.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Before we talk about the movie, I was hoping we could talk a little bit about you and your love for film. And I read that when you received your first camera as a birthday gift, you immediately fell in love with it. And I quote, because it allowed you to stop time and preserve an instant in a frame that would never be experienced again in real life. And I totally get that as a fellow photographer, and I just love that quote. And I was hoping maybe you could tell us a little bit more about your passion for film and photography since that very first moment you first held a camera.
Yeah, it's funny. I've always been interested in it since I was really young. I don't know why. I mean, my family was never really involved in that. My father did some work with the theater, but that was only in high school and a little bit in college. But I was just kind of always, I guess, a visual person, and I when I was really young, I got a camera and took some pictures and really enjoyed it, just like what I could do with different lenses and playing around with perspective and all of that. And then I kind of started thinking about this whole idea of being able to capture something that will never be the same again. You know, you can capture an expression on a person or even on an animal. And something that might not happen again or might be very difficult to get back, but something that gives people an emotion. I mean, ever since I was really young and I got a video camera, my parents, they had one of those old, like, little 8mm or whatever it is, those digital video cameras that came out a while back. And I used to film these movies with my friends, and I had always been interested in trying to make them look more professional by adding sound effects in and starting to actually edit them and, you know, just slowly doing things and making them look better and better.
That's excellent. Now, you've been a professional wedding and headshot photographer for a long time, over 6 years, I believe. Can you tell us how, like, your photography led you down the creative path to writing and directing films, or was it the other way around? And how does 007 James Bond fit into all of this?
Yeah, so it's funny because basically what happened was it was kind of the other way around. I mean, I had always liked, from even before I did video stuff, I'd liked taking pictures, and I had a little camera, but I didn't really know much about it or take it seriously at all. It was just kind of a fun thing, but the actual way that it happened was when I was, I think it was back in maybe year 2000 or something like that, the Nintendo 64 came out. I don't remember what year, but the James Bond game, GoldenEye, for the Nintendo 64 was introduced, and it was the first video game with, like, first-person shooter, so I was totally into it, you know, young guy playing these games, and it kind of got me interested in watching the James Bond movies.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I don't know, I had already been playing around a little bit with my dad's video camera, but then I decided to make a James Bond movie with my friend and, like, set up the camera, and we would act in it with fake guns and stuff, and that was kind of what started this whole thing. And like I was saying, I was trying to make things look more professional, so I would literally connect the video game to the video camera and then record it onto a VHS tape. And so as you watch the movie, if I start shooting the gun in the movie, I would pull the trigger on the video game controller to add in the sound effect.
And that's how MJB Home Entertainment was born?
Kind of, I guess you could say. You know, I mean, I had always had an interest in entrepreneurship since I was really young as well. I wasn't doing anything like what I do now for money. I was selling little crafts on the side of the road when I was younger and trying to hustle, make money that way. And so I guess eventually my love for entrepreneurship and my love for film and photography kind of came together, and then I formed the company. And now, you know, I do a lot of headshots, and that goes back to capturing that expression, you know, that one moment in time and all of that, with film capturing emotions and performances to bring out emotions in people and all. You know, it's just something that I've always been interested in.
Now, your love for the Siberian Husky breed, that developed around the same time as well. As a child, your family dog was a Siberian Husky who, of course, was named Dakota, which I know from speaking with you in the past was a rescue dog. Is that right?
Yes. She. What happened was, my family had two dogs that I kind of grew up with when I was really young. This is back when I, you know, was like 1 year old, and we had these two dogs who were great, always, you know, good friends of mine. They weren't huskies, but we moved to Mexico City for 3 years when I was about five, and we came back when I was eight. But while we were there, one of our dogs passed away, and then the other one shortly thereafter. And so, like a year later, what happened was randomly, my mom went out to, I was at school one day, and she went out to a place with, I believe, my aunt, and they went to a rescue place and got a Siberian Husky and brought it home and completely surprised us. I had no idea. I was just walking in, and I open up the front door, and suddenly this dog is, like, jumping up on me, and it was so unexpected, but really, really exciting at the same time. And originally her name was Dakota originally, and then we were trying to change her name to Princess or something, but we wound up deciding to go with Dakota because it was more unique, and you know, that's kind of how we got her, and I like that name, Dakota.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously,
it's a good name.
Yeah.
Now, I know you said you've learned a lot from having dogs in your life and growing up with them, especially Dakota, and especially about you've talked about their love and devotion when you and I have talked for the blog article. What is it about the Siberian Husky that you love, and how do you feel that Dakota enhanced your life?
I mean, one thing with her, for me, I've always liked bigger dogs anyway, because I feel like more on the same level with bigger dogs, and not those huge dogs, because, you know, they're a little bit too big. But the one thing about the Husky is that it was the perfect size to, like, hug, you know, you could, like, grab it and hug it. And then the other thing, though, is that they're really fun and energetic. And so even once Dakota was like 13 years old, she was still running around and jumping up on me and doing all kinds of stuff. I mean, even though she had, I think, arthritis and all of that, she was still, like, the most fun dog. She wasn't the kind that would just lay down and sleep and ignore you, you know?
Right. That sounds like a true Siberian Husky.
Yeah.
Now, she was your inspiration behind the movie, but that came later on, is that right? Because you... Just maybe talk a little bit about how she inspired you, you know, for this movie, for the title of the movie, and then maybe you could just elaborate a little bit on the movie and give listeners a little bit of a peek inside the story.
Yeah, well, basically, the actual inspiration from the movie didn't have to do with her. I originally, the movie was supposed to be a comedy. I think when I was a freshman in NYU, this is a number of years ago already, I kind of just came up with this idea that I wanted to do some sort of comedy family film with a dog. And originally the film was supposed to be about this guy who had this terrible secret or did these terrible things in his past, and he was talking to his dog about it. And then from talking to his dog so much, eventually the dog, like, learns how to talk. And so the guy, he winds up finding this girl who he falls in love with, but then the dog tells the girl the secrets that this guy had, and she freaks out and leaves him, and then he has to team up with the dog to get the girl back. That was supposed to be the film originally. It was just kind of an idea, and originally I was going to have, you know, a standard, you know, easy to work with golden retriever type of dog, and it was going to be stereotypically named Buddy. But, you know, that idea throughout my time in college pretty much just sat up until about senior year when I came back to it. And I kind of developed the story in a writing class, just basically coming up with some ideas of how I can make the story more truthful or more interesting. And it wound up going from a comedy to a drama, but with some funny parts, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But... you know, then as I started taking the film more seriously, my dog Dakota wound up passing away. She had actually gotten bit by a rattlesnake out in Colorado where my family lives. So she was kind of old, so she couldn't really see very well, I guess. And there's snakes out there sometimes, and I think that she got bit on the mouth, and so family had to take her to the vet, and they said that she was too old to, like, that an antidote wouldn't really work, so they had to put her to sleep. And at that point, I decided to change the dog to a husky and name it Dakota. Actually, originally it was supposed to be called My Best Friend, but then once I changed everything, it was going to be called Dakota, just after her name.
Oh, that's a nice, that's a great legacy to her. And I know as many people out there listening too, and Robert, I'm sure you do. I'm going to say, I swear my dogs talk to me. I really do.
I do too. I think that they tell us secrets that we don't always want to hear sometimes.
You know, that's very true. They're very honest.
That is true.
Now, Martin, can you tell us a little bit more about, like, you know, obviously this is a work of fiction, right? I think, you know, Dakota, of course, was a real dog, but the story itself becomes a work of fiction. And what types of audiences would you say that this movie will be suited for?
Well, we've done a little bit of experimenting, not with the actual film, but with the story and the concept, and it seems to be a lot of people really like it. I mean, the dog community definitely has responded really well, obviously, considering I'm on this radio show right now with you. But there's definitely been interest from younger people as well, even like really young kids. One of the primary actors who's going to be in the film, Kevin Gage, he was in Heat and a few other big films a number of years ago. He just read the screenplay a couple months ago to his 5-year-old son, and the 5-year-old son loved it and keeps asking, when is the movie coming out in theaters?
Well, now that's a good judge of a movie.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's definitely got the interest from kids because of the dog and the fact that the dog kind of talks in it and it gives it some magical sense. But then there's also interest because it's a love story between the main character and the girl, mm-hmm. Jenna. So there's interest for some older people as well. So I kind of, based off of what we've been talking about with the producers and some other people, it seemed to show interest from all four major quadrants of audiences, you know, older people to younger people and male to female. So hopefully it'll appeal once it's been fully made, you know.
Now, for any listeners who are just tuning in, we're talking with writer and film director Martin Benson about his movie in the making, Dakota, dedicated to my best friend, and about the relationship between a man and a Siberian husky. Listeners can find out more by visiting the movie's website at www.dakotathemovie.com or checking in on my blog for a link to the movie over at www.fivesides.blogspot.com. Now, Martin, in your movie, Kurt, the main character, is very dimensional. He's being, you know, being successful and saving people in his job, but then he winds up being the one who needs saving. So enter Dakota. That is such a realistic conundrum. What sparked you to write about that particular who saved who type of scenario?
You know, it's actually something really interesting in terms of how I came up with that idea. The actual idea for the film, obviously, I told you, was originally supposed to be a comedy with some weird stuff, but it's really interesting the way that writing evolves over time, and as you think about things and ask yourself questions, you kind of formulate entirely different stories that might not be something that you had originally intended. And because of that, it kind of came out like this, and the whole idea of the saving back and forth, and I'll really quick, just for people who are listening, because we didn't go over the story completely before, the story is about this guy, Kurt, who had this terrible incident that happened in his past, and so he's been depressed for a while and winds up finding this dog, Dakota, who he takes home. And he's looking for a collar and asks the dog its name, and that's when the dog says, "My name is Dakota," and Kurt is completely surprised. He doesn't expect the dog to talk, and he doesn't know whether he's going crazy or what's going on, but he kind of just goes with it because he's been so depressed, and he starts talking to the dog, and the story basically follows the healing relationship that the dog has with him in terms of him getting over his depression, because what had happened in the past was that he was in this bar fight and a fire broke out, and this man that he was in the fight with died in the fire, and so he feels responsible for it. And the woman that the main character, Kurt, is in love with, named Jenna, her brother was the one who died in the fire. And so he feels like there's this terrible thing going on, and he can't tell Jenna the truth about what happened. And, you know, so the dog kind of helps him to come with to terms with all of that. But what's interesting about it is I had been thinking as I wrote the whole kind of message, one of the messages in the film, I feel, is that people sometimes take responsibility, especially people who are kind of depressed or sad with the way things are going. Sometimes people take responsibility for things that aren't their own fault. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of films have the opposite message, that you should take responsibility when something is your fault, or, you know, that sort of thing. But mine, I kind of wanted to look at it in a different way, that we have to realize when something isn't our fault or when something couldn't be helped, that we have to get over these things that have happened to us in order to move on with our lives. And that's kind of what when I came up with that idea, I kind of started exploring that a little bit more and took the writing in a little bit different of a direction, but, you know, still kind of the same way. But it was just something interesting that I kind of happened to fall upon as I wrote the film.
Now, can we talk about the cast just very briefly? Can you tell us who the characters are? I mean, can you talk about that and who you have slated to play them?
Yes. Right now, we have a few people who are locked in. We have Andrew Roth, who's an excellent actor. He's actually the one who's been helping out with a lot of the producing aspects in the film. He's great. We already shot a scene with him. There's also the little promo video that we filmed with the psychiatrist that's on the website actually features him in it. He's playing the main character of Kurt Lawson, so that's Andrew Roth. Then we have the diner manager who Kurt works for, because you had mentioned before that Kurt was saving people's lives, and that was because originally he's a skiing... What are they called?
Like a skiing paramedic?
Ski patrol, that sort of person. Yeah, and then after that terrible incident, he kind of quit that job and just got a job at this local diner. And that's the diner manager's name is Mark Chadwick, and he's being played by Kevin Gage. And then we have Michael Sandy, who's playing the antagonist, the bad guy, Jonathan Black. And that Jonathan Black is Jenna's boyfriend in the film. So kind of there's a lot of different characters in the film. Jenna, as the girl that Kurt is kind of still in love with from the past, she now has a boyfriend named Jonathan.
Ah, a love triangle, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And so Jonathan obviously hates Kurt because of this. And there's some things going on. Jonathan does something terrible towards the end of the film to Dakota. And so, you know, there's definitely a lot of drama in there.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Okay. I was going to say right now we have, as Dakota, the canine lead, we have a dog named Apache. This actor whose stage name, Raw Leba, he's actually going to be the one right now who's slated. His dog is extremely well-trained, and so we're going to be using Apache as the Dakota. There's no pictures yet of Apache on the website, but we're getting them actually soon.
I actually do want to talk to you a little bit more about canine actors, but I just one other quick question relating to who's in the film. Is there someone that you'd love to have in the film and don't yet, or would be like a dream person, even if it's just a cameo?
I mean, right now, my biggest wish would be if we were able to get Robin Williams to play the voice of Dakota.
Ah, that
I think
great.
That would be perfect, because he's an excellent actor and people know him. Obviously, having a big name actor like that would help greatly with obviously getting funding for the film, but then also with the distribution. And The cool thing about if we had Robin Williams is since he'd just be doing voice acting, he would only need to come in for like a day or maybe 2 days maximum to record all of his lines, and that would be it. So we would be able to keep the cost down but still have his name attached.
So, Robin, if you're listening, because, you know, I would love to have him listen to our show, wouldn't you, Robert?
Of course.
If you're listening, there's a movie that would love to have you be part of it. Martin, I know from previous conversations this movie is, and obviously it's something that's very, you know, your whole heart and soul is wrapped up in, and I know you're working on funding for the film, both by yourself and with funding support by investors. If folks were interested in investing in the film, is that something you're open to, and how would they go about doing that, and would they be recognized somehow in the film for their support?
Yes, definitely. I mean, there's two different means for getting funding to the film. We have investors and then just contributions, donations. So any kind of contributions or donations, small amounts are definitely welcome. We did have a Kickstarter campaign going a while back, but that was last year. The film was supposed to be shot in January of this year, but we had to postpone it because we kind of ran out of time in getting everything together because it was kind of going last minute. But now at this point, we're just kind of, we didn't go the Kickstarter route because it kind of, the maximum that we get isn't really enough to make too much of a difference with it. And so we kind of decided to go more with the investors. For instance, if investors come onto films and then they give like $50,000 or $100,000 or something, and then once the film gets distribution, they start getting all that money back plus a percentage more, and so they hopefully, you know, end up making money off of the film. Now, if people are actually interested in either donating or investing, people can contact me directly through either the website at dakotathemovie.com. There's a contact form or a you know, email address listed there. Or you can email me directly. My email is, info@dakotathemovie.com is the one that you could use. So there's definitely ways for people to get involved, whether they want to get a small amount or a big, or, you know, invest with a big amount, and then they'll get credits on the film, or if they're an investor, they'll obviously hopefully make money back if the film sells. But other times, we also have options if people want to kind of promote the film and they can't give any money themselves, we're definitely open to doing something like that as well, where, you know, you get a credit if you have a big blog or something like that, or a radio show that promotes the film like this, and then you get credited in the film and all of that, so, you know.
And moving back on to the film, I know in films, you know, there are animal actors, and such as in the movie like Eight Below, there are several dogs who portray one husky for various scenes. And assuming that's the same in Dakota, would you be using more than one canine actor?
Well, we would love to have more than one canine actor just as a backup, or, I mean, as long as they look similar enough that you can't tell the difference. I know huskies have a lot of different markings and all, so it's a little bit difficult in terms of that versus, say, using a, you know, a golden retriever where they all look very similar.
Right.
But
right.
We're definitely able to do that, and we actually have a few other dogs who need to be in the film as well for smaller roles. There's a puppy husky that we have. Not really much training is needed for that, but there's some flashback scenes to where Dakota was a puppy. And then there's a few other dogs throughout the film. So, I mean, it's definitely something that we're open to, but it's just difficult with, because huskies are really hard to train, so as the main
actor. They're known for their stubborn streak, right, Robert?
Yeah.
Once they're trained and they know it, they're like, okay, what's next?
I think one of the most difficult things to do is to train a Siberian husky in basic obedience just because of that stubborn streak.
Now, Robert's a canine behaviors trainer and musher. So, Robert, in your opinion, I would love if you could just maybe elaborate a little bit more on that. How does it differ from obedience? Say, you know, from, I know you train them in sledding and obedience, but now you have a dog that you want to do acting, which is, you know, commands, of course, and then a lot of waiting, which is not always a husky's best attribute because they do get bored very easily. So in your opinion, how do you see training a husky for an acting role?
Well, first and foremost, good luck to Martin on that whole deal there. He's in for a lot of work and a lot of retakes, I think, at least with the Siberian actor. But all jokes aside, I know that that huskies they're one of the prototypical breeds for at least Americans. You know, a lot of people identify with the Siberian as that prototypical beautiful dog. So I think you'll really capture an audience with that breed. Over, you know, everybody has seen movies with Labradors and Golden Retrievers and Beagles and, you know, that sort of thing. So I do commend you for taking that route. But yeah, like we were talking about, they're tough cookies when it comes to training. And I know you had mentioned Apache being very well trained, and you know, that's awesome. You know, it takes a lot of work and a lot of dedication on the handler or the owner's part to get that way. But I do think they're capable, don't you think, Dorothy? They're capable of doing what needs to be done, and the magic of film, what Martin has talked a lot about, is being able to capture that moment. You can do 1,000 retakes, but that one special moment will be captured on film, and that's what you'll see. So if you have to do 1,000 sits, if you get that perfect one, that's all that matters.
Yeah, and I think there's something, you know, I'm not a filmographer or work with film, but I do, you know, snippets, and I am a photographer with them, and I have to tell you, they know when they hit their mark, because they get this, they're very proud, and they're just, when you capture it, you know it, and they know it, and it really is a very beautiful moment.
It is.
You know, Martin, back to, like, your plans for hiring additional huskies. I know, like, you know, you'll be looking for some additional ones who would be similar in looks, maybe for long-distance scenes or running scenes, and as opposed to, you know, the close-ups, because you'll have to focus more on Apache. Mm-hmm. But have you given any thought to getting in touch with any rescues in the area? I know that a lot of them do training programs with the huskies that they have in-house or with the foster parents. And I was wondering if you ever thought about maybe, you know, contacting with any of them to see if they have any huskies that could be in the film. Maybe not necessarily just Dakota or extras or something along those lines.
Yeah, I mean, I thought about it back when I was really looking for the dog and reached out to a few different places. It seemed some of the response that I was getting was a little bit you know, negative in terms of that they didn't think that the dog would be good enough, or that they thought that or that the price would be, like, too high for the budget of the film to be able to, you know, have a dog that's trained well enough. So, you know, I mean, if you know some people who are involved with all of that and might have a husky, or anybody listening to this has some huskies, I'd be definitely willing to talk with people. I mean, in my view, you can't have enough huskies, whether it's for a film or just to be with.
I agree. That's the old Siberian husky potato chip syndrome. You can't have just one. but if some of these huskies, because a lot of the rescues do put a lot of work into their huskies, into, you know, retraining them and working with them. They do some great work. And if there was any that were out there that, you know, actually were interested, you mind if, like, I'll connect you guys then, and I can even maybe reach out and see if any are interested. For them, would you give them a credit in the film for the rescue? So this way we can shine a little flashlight on their rescue?
Of course I would. I am totally open. I love promoting different places like that. I mean, you know, a rescue is where I got my dog, and Dakota, the real Dakota, made a huge difference in my life. So I am totally willing to promote them and do whatever, donate even a small portion of the money that's made from the film, whatever we can figure out if they're interested, you know.
I think that's excellent. And I do want to talk about that a little bit more, you know, a little later on. But I want to just kind of talk a little bit more on the film and the dogs. And I know you work with the one for promos, you know, in the promo ad. How is it different working with a canine star than working with people?
Oh, well, I mean, it's obviously the whole thing is much different because, when you're working with people, they're, I mean, I guess you can, sometimes it's similar in the fact that if the person is acting for free and they don't want to listen to you, you can't really force them to do much. But, you know, I mean, with dogs, it's really a little bit more tricky because you need to know how to explain what to do to them, and you need to have somebody who can show them, and I don't know that stuff personally. I'm working with a person, I can just say, all right, you're going to go here, you want to do this. I direct them through, you don't want to do what's called result directing with people, because that's where you say, all right, I need you to be sad for this scene. Instead, what you do is, because sad can mean any number of things, you know, you could be sad from that you didn't get a good grade on a test, to sad that your entire life has slipped away or something and you've never done that one thing you wanted to do. You know, there's totally different things. And so with people, you direct with the result, you direct the through, you know, what will lead to the result that you want. But with dogs, it's kind of the opposite. You seem to have to be very direct with them and getting them to do, it's more physical actions that dogs do.
And I would imagine have a lot of treats, because they are definitely driven by treats. I know mine are.
yes, definitely.
Martin, if I may ask a question, do dogs require rider clauses, you know, having M&Ms and Avion and that sort of thing in their dressing room?
I don't know. I mean, it depends who it is, I guess. You know, they'll want a bowl of chicken or something.
Exactly.
Yes, that's right. That's good. Now, Martin, how did you, I know you have a couple of co-producers on your project, and just briefly, how did you, how'd you select your co-producers?
Well, it's kind of, like I said, Andrew Roth was the main producer on the film. What happened was, I was originally slated to do this film the way I did my first feature, which was a hip-hop film called Mozart of Rap, about hip-hop mixed with symphony. And the way that we did that was by shooting everything kind of with my own equipment and very minimal crew, just shooting it and making the film. I learned a lot of things when I did that film, and then over time I learned even more. And if I shot this film like that, it would probably come out pretty well. But then I got into looking for actual actors and everything, and I mean, Mozart of Rap had really great actors and all, but these actors who are coming in, are a couple of them are producers too, and the difference is that the main character, Andrew Roth, he mentioned to me that he knows a lot of people and has a lot of contacts. So I said, all right, well, we can definitely you on as the main character if you're able to help out with producing and all of that. And then I was really lucky that I did have him as the main character, because his acting is excellent. So he's kind of connected with me with a lot of people and helped me put together some more producers for the film. And it's kind of been a, I don't know what you would call it, but it's kind of been spreading out. And so more and more people have been contacting me and know about the film. And because of Andrew, we were able to get in touch with this guy out in California who knows some investors, and it's just kind of been happening organically, you know, with me finding people who I feel would be good to keep on as producers for the film, you know.
You know, you've started some filming, and I know you talk about, your winter scenes, and hopefully we are going to have a winter in this state, New York. Last year we had an unusually warm winter, but where will you be doing some of your shoots? Can we know that? Because I know, because it's supposed to take place in Colorado, so you're using upstate New York for some of them. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Right now, we're not totally sure. Originally, the film was supposed to take place in Colorado, but I might be changing it. I don't know exactly yet where I want it to take place. I just know that it takes place in the mountains, and we were thinking maybe it could just be New York-based or something, the story. But we are going to be doing all the shooting in New York because, A, there's some tax incentives if you shoot all in one state, but, B, it's going to keep a lot of the production costs down. Right now, if we had been shooting out in Colorado, my family lives there still, but now at this point they're actually moving to New York in the next month. So they're not going to be there, so we won't have any place to stay or anything like that, so that'll increase the cost even more.
Right.
So we're probably going to be shooting it up in Woodstock, most of the outdoor scenes where you see the mountains and the ski resort and all of that.
Absolutely beautiful area up there, and a lot of dog lovers up there too, so that's a great area.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of films that are shot there, so people in the community kind of know about it.
It is, yeah. They actually hold a film festival up in Woodstock each year as well, too, so it's actually a very good good community for this type of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, for the indoor scenes, it kind of doesn't really matter where we shoot it because you can't really tell as long as there's snow outside the windows and we're shooting.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to have Robert start packing up some snow and sending it to New York if we don't get any snow here this year.
Well, I tell you what, guys, there are some very, very generous film tax credits up here in Alaska. If you just look at Ice Road Truckers and Deadliest Catch and all that. So if you're interested in finding snow, Alaska is the place to be for sure.
That's a good idea. I mean, depending on the cost, I hadn't even thought about Alaska. I don't know why, but hey, that would be a really cool place to shoot it. You know?
And I know someone who has a whole team of Huskies that could be great for extras.
Exactly. Dorothy, can I ask a question of Martin, please?
Sure.
You know, Martin, we've had a lot of filmmakers here on our DogWorks radio show, everybody from documentaries to feature films, and I'm always fascinated by some of the behind-the-scenes stuff that you know, the average viewer never sees. You know, a lot of people think, wow, they filmed the movie, it's going to be out in a couple of weeks, you know, it's a very quick process, but it's not. It takes a long time, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. We're planning to shoot the film in January or February, assuming that there's snow. And then we probably won't have it released up until January or February, maybe around winter time, like even December or something of 2013. Otherwise, definitely 2014. Because, the whole shooting process of the film can go by fairly quick. It might take about a month or so of actual shooting. But then once you get into the editing, and there's a lot of file conversion that you have to do to get things into an editable format, you have to do special effects, you have to, actually the editing process itself to just cut a rough cut takes a really, really long time. Because, you know, a film might be 2 hours long, but you might have shot like 20 to 30 hours of footage that you have to go through, constantly picking out the best takes and all of that. So it's a huge process, and then you have to do sound work, you have to do packaging of the DVDs, and whatever. Like, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it behind the scenes that people don't realize. And the funny thing about filmmaking, and actually lots of artistic things, and anything that's kind of created to present to somebody is... The whole point is taking something that's super complicated and super took a ton of work and making it a seamless, smooth watching experience and making it look like everything was super easy to do, which is kind of, you know, annoying sometimes for filmmakers because somebody watches something that you've put your entire life into, and then they're like, oh, that was nice, you know, and they watch it for like 2 hours and don't realize any of the hard work that's been put into it. So,
if I could just a follow up to that, what are your plans, your goals for this, Martin? You know, I'm sure everybody wants it to be on the big screen in every theater in America. But what is your ultimate plan here? Is it the message? Is it the viewership? Is it, you know, what is it for you? What's your goal for this for your tale here about Dakota?
Well, really, I mean, obviously, besides, we are fairly close to having a Regal Cinemas distribution in 10 theaters, which would be really cool. But really, the whole thing is, based off of the name of the film, Dakota, I kind of have viewed this as, like, this is something that, this film, I want it to be just, like, this whole thing dedicated to my dog. as like a, you know, a tribute to what Dakota did for me in terms of I didn't have very many friends when I was in middle school, you know, those years when everybody seems to be mean to you and, you know, people make fun of you for random stuff. So I barely had any friends, and Dakota was like my only real friend. And she was kind of there for me as I was growing up and all. And so I just wanted to make this film. And I don't, as long as it comes out really, really good and it looks really, it's an enjoyable watching experience. The story is already there because of the script and everything is done. But as long as I'm super satisfied with the quality of the film, obviously I'd like it to go all over the place, but even if it doesn't, just having it screen at one place and having people see the story and realize what Dakota meant to me as my dog, that would be enough for me.
Sounds great. Go ahead, Dorothy.
Oh, sorry, Robert. those are the technical things of talking to someone in Alaska over a cordless phone from New York. There's a slight delay, so I apologize for the cutting you off there. It is so heartwarming to hear how much Dakota meant to you, and I think all of us, dog parents definitely can relate to that. And I know she's probably smiling, north of the Rainbow Bridge, seeing what you're doing today and working on this movie dedicated to her. And I also just wanted to share with our listeners, I know Martin during our interview for my blog article, you stated that, part of the message you wanted to deliver through the movie, too, and I think you're spot on with this, is that you emphasize how the message is not just related to Siberian Huskies, but all dogs, and how very special they are as companions. And I just wanted to share with viewers your quote here, and you said, "They are the animals that will jump up and lick you the moment you get home, and if they haven't seen you in years, even if they haven't seen you in years, and they are the animals who will always be there for us no matter what. I hope this movie shows to people across the country just how important their dogs are." And I just think that's really wonderful sentiment, and I think that's something we all can relate to.
The whole thing with dogs, in my opinion, is, it's one of these things where it's kind of like you don't realize it until it's not there anymore. You know what I mean? Like, and I want people to realize it. And that's why I'm showing how much of a difference this dog makes in the life of this one character. Just to kind of, because at the time, I love Dakota. But, at the time it was just like, yeah, she's a dog, she's there. But then when I think back on it now, it's totally different, and I realize how much she meant, and I just wish that she was still here, and that's the kind of message that people have to realize while their dogs are still there. They have to realize how much of a difference and how important their dogs are and how much their dog cares about them.
I think that's an absolutely great message, and I also think it's wonderful. You mentioned a little earlier that, after the film has been funded and it is actually released, that you plan on, giving back by donating a percentage to a rescue for, homeless huskies. I know how hardworking those Siberian Husky Rescue community is, and I know they can sure use the assistance, whether it's in the form of funding or homes for the huskies that they save, and I'm sure they'll truly appreciate, the support through the film.
Yeah.
Now, what's next for you? Will we be seeing any more films? Maybe more husky or animal related? Maybe a Dakota 2?
I mean, honestly, I'm not totally sure yet. I do have another film that's been written, a crazy slapstick comedy that takes place in the future with this guy saving the world with a lot of special effects and all that stuff. It's really funny. I'd love to shoot it, but it is a big budget for that one, a really big budget. So I honestly don't really know. And I've kind of been thinking about things in terms of this film. I mean, obviously it's a great story, and I only thought of this the other day. But if for some reason we're unable to get the funding to make this full feature this year, what I may do instead, because I kind of said this to myself last year, that if I don't get the right amount of money to make this film the right way, I'd rather just postpone it another year than make it the wrong way, because I want this film to be, it's a dedication to my Dakota, and So I want to do it the right way. So what I'm thinking is, if I don't get the funding this year, I may end up doing a short of this film. Like, somehow take the whole film and change it into a short. Because I could shoot that and spend my own money, spend like $5,000 or something, and get the actors and shoot it really, really well. Get the Husky and do a short this year. And put that out to film festivals and get the notoriety for the film to be able to make the feature next year. You know, just in case we can't get that funding, I would do that. But then after Dakota has actually been made, I think that what I may do is, you know, I'll probably be looking into some other stories. I'm kind of one of these directors who wants to try everything and try all different types of genres. I do love dogs, but I'm not sure whether I would do another one next. But I know for a fact I'm going to do more dog movies down the line. I just don't know what's the next one after this.
Well, I think short or full length, I think it's going to be a great movie. And I know movie premieres are what dreams are made of. And after the funding is secure and filming has been completed and the movie's released, have you thought down the road at like a special event marking the release? I mean, is there a red carpet in the future where maybe a Siberian Husky will be strolling down for the paparazzi?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I don't obviously know the details of it yet, but if the film does have that, you know, get the funding, then we're definitely, once we make it, if we get the funding, that's all that matters. Even if we don't get an actual distribution deal, I'm definitely going to have a big red carpet event. I'll pay for it if I have to with my own money, but I want to have something at a theater and have a bunch of people coming there and have the characters walking down and having Dakota, and we'll probably keep Dakota's collar and maybe give that out to something or even to a rescue or something, you know, the actual collar that Dakota wears, because that's kind of the symbolic thing towards the end of the film when Kurt gives Dakota a collar. Because throughout the whole movie, Dakota doesn't have one.
Oh, wow. That's going to be, I mean, what a celebratory moment. And, you know, so I actually don't have to emphasize that, you know, Team Ineke and Five Sibes will definitely be invited to this event.
Yes, definitely.
So just one last note that I wanted to ask you, you know, when the end credits start to roll, what is it that you hope people are going to feel when they get up and leave that theater?
You know, it's like I said before, it's that message, but the ending of the film just has this feeling where you just kind of get this warm feeling. I mean, even me, I wrote the film, but I've read it so many times and stuff, but every time that myself or people around me read the ending page of the script, the ending couple of pages of the script, they always kind of get, you know, that like tingly feeling down your spine where it's like, oh, yeah, I really like it. Because my whole thing is to just make people be like, wow, I wish that I had a Dakota, too, for those people who don't. Or if they do have a dog, be like, you know, I wish that my relationship with my dog was like that, and how can I make it like that, you know?
Martin, I think those are great messages, and I thank you so much for joining us. And before we do any closing here, I just wanted to mention to folks that you know, we're very excited to have Martin Benson on the Side Vibe today, and we're looking forward to updates on the release of your movie, Dakota, dedicated to my best friend. And I'd like to remind our listeners that they can find out more info on the movie and the cast and crew by visiting the movie's website at www.dakotathemovie.com or by checking in on my blog, and don't forget to keep an eye out for that upcoming article on Martin and Dakota, and that's going to be over at fivesides.blogspot.com sometime this week. And Martin, is there anything else that you would like to let our listeners know?
I mean, well, yes. The last thing that I want people to know is I kind of know how it is in terms of, you know, when people listen to something going on, they listen, and then that's the end of it usually. But I want to let people know that I am totally, I'm one of these people who will respond to every email, any phone call. If people want to reach out to me and they have an idea or they want to be involved with something with the film, you know, I'm totally open to that, and I would love to chat with any person who wants to talk with me. You know, it means a huge deal to me to see any sort of support from people who might be listening to this show, and that's why, you know, I'm willing to chat with anybody or get people involved. If somebody knows of a Husky or somebody knows of someone who's invested in films before, or you just have a question and you want to ask me, I'm totally open to that, so feel free.
Oh, I think that's great. That's really great to be so accessible, and I know that's a wonderful connection to make. Robert, do you have anything else for Martin that you'd like to add?
No, just the point that Martin just made. You know, the beauty of a show like this is you will get those listeners throughout time. It's not something like on TV where you see it now and you won't see it again. We have people that contact us a year later, and they say, wow, just listen to this show. How can I get in contact with the guests? And we'll forward along their email or their website or whatever. So the beauty of a show like this is you're able to have that listenership that goes in and out at different periods of time. So you'll be amazed at the comments that you may get much later than today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, that's great. Well, thank you so much, Martin. And we'll definitely be in touch and keep up to date on what's going on with Dakota the Movie.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you guys so much. This was a great opportunity, and I'm really, you know, I'm really happy that you guys had me on the show. This was great. It's perfect, you know, Siberian Husky type of show. That's cool.
Very cool. Well, Martin, thank you very much. We'll definitely send over some links and things when we get them posted, okay?
All right, that sounds good. Thanks.
Take care. All right, Dorothy, what's going on in November? What's the show on the Side Vibe?
Well, November, as I stated earlier, is National Epilepsy Awareness Month. And as part of my new Live Gibbs Strong Awareness Campaign, which is named after my woolly Siberian Husky, Gibson, who's six, and he was diagnosed, as a lot of our listeners know, as a canine epileptic when he just turned three. And I'll be promoting awareness of canine epilepsy and seizure disorders and how dogs do live full and happy lives through this campaign, which I actually unveiled at the recent Tales of the Tundra Siberian Husky Rescues Tales on the Trails event that I attended in Pennsylvania. And I have several special things going on that we'll talk more about next month. As part of this very important awareness campaign, on Sunday, November 11th, the Side Vibe will be welcoming guest Marion Mitchell, and she's the site co-owner and manager of Canine Epilepsy Resources. And their website is www.canine-epilepsy.com. And that site's filled with valuable information and resources for EpiDog parents worldwide. It's also the home of the Apple Canine emailing list, where fellow Epi parents can chat with each other via email about their EpiDog symptoms, medications, and offer support to each other. Also, if you have a question and you kick out an email to the group, you know that it's a fantastic group. You know, usually someone always gets back, if not several. And you know, you have that sense of not feeling alone. Plus, if there's something going on out there, for us to be aware of, it's a great way to stay in touch. Marion is also the Hugh mom to several Dalmatians, including her fur angel Emma, who was the original face of canine epilepsy and the namesake for the Emma's Fund, which is a memorial fund through the neurology department of the veterinarian school at North Carolina State University. Emma's Fund is used to help the neurology and genetics department with small projects or pieces of equipment. And the Emma's Fund is also where a portion of my What's Wrong with Gibson Learning About Canine Epilepsy children's book proceeds benefits. So through education and awareness, we hope folks will realize that dogs who have seizures and or canine epilepsy can live full and happy lives with a little special care and a whole lot of love. So I'm really hoping that listeners will mark their calendars and tune in for this very important informative show.
That's November 11th,
yes.
1 p.m. Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Alaska Time. Check us out at dogworksradio.com. You can definitely follow us on Facebook, Twitter, just about anywhere. And, of course, on Dorothy's website. What is that website once more?
Currently, it's the 5fives.blogspot.com. I'm working on 5fives.com, but right now it just says something cool's coming, so I have to kick that up on my priority list. But 5fives.blogspot.com, or, you know, people can chat with me or leave me comments over on the 5fives Siberian Husky Canine News and Reviews Facebook page.
Very cool. Dorothy, anything else in closing?
No, I just want to, you know, wish everybody out there a great month and stay in touch with us. I know Robert and I both love hearing comments from, you know, our listeners and from, you know, our readers. So, you know, stay in touch and we'll talk to you next month.
Very cool. And a big shout out to our guest today, Martin Benson. He is the writer and director of Dakota the Movie, dakotathemovie.com. Check it out. It will be out forthcoming pretty soon, but it's in the works right now and looks like a fun film. Make sure you guys check out that website. I'm sure he'll post some new stuff as the weeks and months come along. Dorothy, it was my pleasure. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Always a pleasure, Robert.
All right. So on behalf of our guests, we'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.